walking down the highway with my suitcase in my hand.
That could almost be a song written by Dave Hoekstra. It's Bob Dylan. This is Rick Hogan filling in for John Williams, and my friend Dave Hoekstra is in here, one of the most talented writers, as I said. And I hope some of you people still get a hard copy of the Chicago Tribune, because you would have seen cool photos of Dave and read some stuff about him. Others of you probably only listened to him on the Nocturnal Journal, which is on Saturday nights, which is a lively and eclectic show. David, how are you?
Doing okay. Thanks for having me.
You got a big party tomorrow night, don't you?
Yeah, it's a little screening of bits and pieces of a documentary we've been working on for like 2.5-3 years on music around Springfield, Missouri. You know, we tried it. It's in the Ozarks, but it's not about Branson. So it's about it's about the old Springfield, like the Ozark Jubilee, and some of the people came through there, Porter Wagoner and Johnny Cash. But the real hook is modern day people that went down there to record at a studio run by the late Lou Whitney. Like our own
who in your documentary seems, you can see bits and pieces of the documentary, who seems like the most charming, individualistic character I've met in a long time.
Yeah. Real rock on tour, really took, I think he moved to Springfield in the late 60s, mid 60s, and he really took the city under his wings and under his spell, and he was a real historian. He would take people around, whether it be me or musicians recording there, and say, this is where the Carter family lived when they were on the Ozark Jubilee.
Well, he's great in the video. He's got a point where just an empty space and talks about the Carter family, if you can believe that.
Yeah, and Lou was sick. Lou had cancer, and we did that footage maybe 8 or 9 months before he passed away.
So your history with Springfield, Missouri goes back much further than 2.5-3 years.
Yeah, we backed into this, and there's just no way out now. About 2000-2001, I did a 2-part series for the Country Music Hall of Fame for their Journal of Country Music, and Lou was kind of my vessel into that. Again, first part was old Springfield. Second part was new Springfield. Wilco going down there, Robbie Fulks going down there, the Del Lords. I mean, here's the Del Lords, a punk band from New York, going to Springfield, Missouri. So you know that got a lot of attention. And Lou and I always just talked about maybe doing more with it, and nothing happened for like 10 or 12 years. I was busy with my newspaper work.
Well, yes, that is a job.
and then we just started.
What was the catalyst for you after all that time? It wasn't just that. Oh well, I have a little more free time on my hands. It was it he getting older?
And like you, I like telling stories that no one knows about, you know? And this is, I mean, you tell people that some of these songs came out, and this is what we're going to cover tomorrow night, and we have a group coming up from Springfield that plays these songs. You tell people, like, The Box Tops the Letter came out of Springfield. Always On My Mind came out of Springfield.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't born in Springfield, but the guy who wrote that pop song Sugar Shack, Springfield. There's really an untold music scene there, and as America changes, I mean, really, how many small communities are doing regional music like that? It really is fading away. So that's
why, even given your 2-part series about the town, how did it remain sort of a secret place for so long, especially in these days where, you know, everything's covered. You know, it's hard to find secret things.
That's a great question. I think Robbie talks about it in our doc, and the guys from New York talk about it. It's a hard place to get to. You know, I've been there 10 times, maybe, at least.
Driving.
I drive all the time. It's a hard 8 hours from Chicago. It's where Route 66 was kind of invented and commissioned. But, you know, my co-producer Jamie, she flew down there for an event we did there last summer. You had to get to Kansas City and then drive from Kansas City. Maybe you fly into Branson, but that's really expensive. So it's very remote. And it's real interesting to me, as we've been working on this, what that remoteness and what that isolation means to the art, you know. And you don't want to over-romanticize it, but is it a little more pure? Is it a little more unaffected? Robbie says, you know, you go down there to record, and there's no business people, no Nashville, New York people hanging around. You just do your thing, you know.
Really,
I think that's really interesting.
Well, there's a certain freedom in that, too, don't you think?
Yeah. And they can, you know, They can move at their own pace and call their own shots. And Lou was like that as a producer. He produced all these guys, and Lou was real hands off. And you know, it reminded me of some of the stuff I always heard from Ken Nelson, who produced Haggard and Buck Owens and stuff. Haggard and Buck Owens would tell me what would Ken Nelson do at Capitol Records. He would just sit behind them and let them do what they want.
Yeah.
And that's how Lou was.
What brought Lou there in the first place?
He was born in Arizona. He came from a political family in Arizona. I think his grandfather was governor of Arizona or something like that for a while. And then he was a little wild kid. I think he went down to the hills of Tennessee. His family sent him there to kind of straighten out. He was just like stealing cars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They did that. Then he, it's real interesting. He moved to Springfield to start in real estate because they were trying to sell like getaway summer spring homes to people in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin,
and Chicago and stuff like
that.
And then he'd always played in music, in Tennessee. And so then he just started playing around Springfield, opened a studio.
And you really hit it off with him. The affection, even in one portion of the documentary, he's talking about you. He goes, "Dave Hoekstra just asked me a question I need to answer like this."
Yeah. I think Lou was really, really proud of the legacy there. Lou was not doing well when we went out with him there. And I mean, the one morning we had a whole weekend and he had fallen, but he really wanted to see this through. I mean, he had a big gash on his head while we were filming him and stuff. I think it was so important for him to get this untold story told. And I think in a way that's why I'm sticking with it. We've all spent our own money on this so far, and mostly on my crew, Tom Volodik. I mean, I was telling you about him before.
Yeah.
From CBS. He used to work for CBS. He's gone there and there on faith, like 8 or 9 times.
Jamie Caesar,
Caesar,
award-winning producer, and spent a lot of time.
Yeah, she's been great. She jumped into this, and she really didn't really know that much about it.
Yeah.
She's just been really, really great.
But there is something. As your great friend Peter Goromek, the esteemed author, said, there is something so American about this story that you're a very self-effacing guy, but I think that your enthusiasm combined with that sense that this is a story, an American story that needs to be told, is what has enabled all these people to make financial sacrifices and time sacrifices and even emotional sacrifices, don't you think?
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, it's our, when we get this done, it's going to be a story about a community and a vibe. We've been working on it for almost 3 years now, but it's how religion, how the hills, how the rivers,
how the
air, how the food. I'm all obsessed about the Springfield cashew chicken. We're going to talk about that tomorrow night. But how all that informs the music. And I was a big Les Blank fan. He did that with Tejano music. He did that with Cajun music. In a way, people are probably familiar with the Muscle Shoals documentary. They did that, although they have a very strong character there in Rick Hall. But I'm real interested in how community and the vibe of community informs art. And that's kind of what we would do this and maybe others down the road.
Well, because in places like this, I think, Fitzgerald's is an interesting place to be having your event tomorrow night, because that is a community of sorts too.
Exactly.
But in places like Chicago, that whole notion of community is evaporating.
Yeah.
I find.
Yeah.
Don't
Fitzgerald's
you?
Is a good example. Hideout is
yep.
a good example
yep.
of community. The Skeletons, all these guys from Springfield, they played up there. Lou's passed away and the drummer's passed away and their pictures hang in this dressing room. I mean, they're like spirits there. So, yeah.
It is an amazing documentary, what portions of it I've seen. You can see more portions of it tomorrow night at Fitzgerald's at, I think, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, yeah.
8 o'clock. It's only $10 to get in
there. That goes to the band, not to us.
There are a number of bands. Dave Hoekstra has made it his life's work never to make any money.
That's right.
That's one of his hallmarks. We'll take a little break and come back and talk more about this and talk about David's books too. The latest of which was having a show at the Elmhurst History Museum, Disco Demolition.
Well, it took me a woman late last night. I was 3/4 drunk. She looked all right.
That's the voice of Bob Dylan, who, as far as I know, never recorded in Springfield, Missouri. David, tell me I'm wrong.
Never heard of that. Never heard that he did.
Maybe
he
did.
Yeah.
Dave Hoekstra is in here for about 10 more minutes talking about specifically, if any of you are out there with a sort of deep pockets or a deep checkbook, think about writing him a check so he can finish this documentary about Springfield, Missouri. Much of which will be shown, a sort of an appetizer, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Fitzgerald's, the great, great Berwyn Bar, along with a number of performers, David and producer Jamie Caesar, talking about the documentary. and Tony Fitzpatrick doing what Tony Fitzpatrick does.
He's going to introduce the whole thing. Yeah. Raise the spirit. Yep.
Well, I just, and those of you who read the Tribune would have seen a piece about David and this effort to get this thing made. And it may indeed, it's part of a larger dream.
Yeah, it's about three or four. I mean, I'm enamored with the beach music scene in the Carolinas. That's going to be maybe a little easier story to tell. It doesn't go off in so many different directions, but it's about all the rhythm and blues. A lot of it came from Chicago, the Curtis Mayfield, Major Lance, the Impressions. It was a dance scene. They do a dance called the Shag. It helped break down racial barriers in the 1960s. It's a fading thing. This dance called the Shag, they're teaching it now in schools there to try to keep the dance alive, because it's going away.
It's fading away.
I was down there one time. I'm a big baseball fan. Myrtle Beach Pelicans, Cubs have an affiliate down there. But I stayed at the hotel and they were doing like junior shaggers. And it was like a dance floor of 300 kids and their parents were teaching them the Shag. And the first thing I thought of was like, this would be great for a visual. It's a great visual. You know? And the music is so great. So that, and then maybe a cousin of the Shag would be the Steppin' Scene in Chicago, which is kind of going away on the South Side. So we've got three or four. We don't have a lot. But we would use that template for others.
One of the things that's always distinguished you, Dave Hoekstra, is that you have been drawn to these corners, not things that are fading away, but your book about supper clubs, for instance, is a fascinating cultural phenomenon that exists around the Midwest, but it's centered in Wisconsin, I would think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're a kid from Naperville, and I suppose part of it may be the way you saw Naperville become kind of, no offense to Naperville, kind of homogenized from the time you were a youngster to now, and sort of there's a, not a loss of character, but a kind of diminished individuality. Really, I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you, but you know what I mean?
Well, that's interesting. Naperville, I think my parents, they gave me a lot of freedom to, I was probably a little restless, by junior year, even maybe before I drove, I was taking the old Burlington Northern into the city, go see concerts at the Chicago Stadium. And I was editor of the school paper, and we did exchange programs. For a week, I'd go to DuSable, and DuSable kids would come out to Naperville Central. And so I always had that. I was always curious, and I think Naperville, even when I was a teenager, was kind of probably a little restraining for me.
Yeah.
But they gave me the freedom to move around and check things out. I think that maybe just kind of became part of my DNA then,
it certainly did.
And then reading, same thing. I mean, I read Royko and Studs and all that type, a little bit of Algren, and just reading all these Chicago guys, and just I'd come in on the train and I'd go to a Cub game and take the L up to Wrigley Field, and it was just all, larger than life. Yeah, I was just real curious.
For many people, and you're one of them, the city can, at its best, get in your blood.
Yeah.
And it really can, and it becomes a very hard thing to shake. And I think the sort of character and individuality of the city kind of affects, in a kind of ripple effect, the rest of your life. You start looking for these kinds of things like supper clubs.
Yeah, Chicago, I've always told people, I think, and I still say this, it's the most livable big city in America. So accessible, and again, when I was coming up, being able to, on Sunday afternoon, they'd have like matinees at the Earl of Old Town. I'd go to those and stuff. There was stuff within reach that, I don't know, maybe it wouldn't have been that way if we'd been in L.A. or New York. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, now you have a book coming out. Your next, well, you've done all sorts of books. You've done, to my mind, the Supper Club book is fascinating because each one of the places is written like one of those great Dave Hoekstra feature stories where the people in them come alive to you in a wonderful, engaging way. You've also written about soul food. You have also written the Disco Demolition book with Mr. Steve Dahl and collaborating with Paul Natkin, the great photographer. There's a show at the Elmhurst History Museum that opens in a very soon, like in a week.
They're having their first event, I think, on June 8th. I think Steve and Nack and I will be out there signing the book and stuff, and I think that's a preview of the exhibit. They've been sending me pictures of the exhibit. It's going to be It's really nice. I mean, they've got some interesting artifacts. I know Lance Towser, the curator there, he just texted me the other day. He's going through Steve Dahl's storage lockers.
Oh, good God, that would be what a frightening prospect. Yeah,
there's a story in there. But
that could be your next short book. Yeah. Steve Dahl's storage locker.
It's fascinating how that story just doesn't go away. Oh. I wrote the book.
Well, that's why the curator of exhibits out there at the Elmhurst History Museum said he was so taken by the book for a variety of reasons. Well written, and they're nice illustrations, and it tells the stories of many people. But he was taken with the fact that it's 30 years ago. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
And people care deeply.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of people say they were there. There's so many different angles. I mean, all I tried to do with the book is like kind of do an oral history. I just tried to do as much reporting as I could and track down as many people as I could. You know, baseball players who were there. I got Ken Kravick, who was warming up for the second game, and I'm a big, you know. But it's also interesting what happened. I mean, what's really interesting is I don't know if disco really died. I think disco, you know, I mean, I would argue that David Bowie was doing disco after that happened.
Sure,
Madonna was doing disco.
Sure.
But I think Frankie Knuckles said it. I mean, without Disco Demolition, there wouldn't have been house music. And I think that's really, really important. To me, house is like the biggest export out of Chicago since the blues.
Yeah.
So I think that angle of it is really compelling. So there's a lot of really interesting things.
I mean, it's a cultural story. And your next book is about camper.
Yeah.
You drove a camper around.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
I wish I could do more of that. I mean, I was always coming back here. I did take all last June off. But, yeah, we drove 22 states and 23,000 miles in about 9 months, me and my photographer, John Saul. And it's almost the same thing. It's really not how to camp or a guide to campgrounds, but it's about the people who are in campgrounds and what makes them do what they're doing. Why are they unplugging? Why are they going to... you guys all know it's trending up.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, because people are trying to escape.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's an escape. I don't know if they're trying... That's why I can't wait to read the book, whether they're trying to find something on the road or escape from something.
I think part of it's control. I mean, I met a lot of traveling nurses, you know. I mean, like people in their 30s and 40s, and they just work in one place for like 6 months, pick up the RV and go someplace else, and they're homeschooling their kids, and it's control in a chaotic situation.
Well, you know how much I admire you, Dave Hoekstra.
Well, thank you.
Dave is in here specifically to tell you and allow me to tell you to go to Fitzgerald's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock to get some a bit of the future documentary about the music scene and the cultural scene and the food scene in Springfield, Missouri, an unbelievably influential place in a lot of different ways that you know very little about. If I can't make it with my various ailments and stuff, have a great time. If I can make it, we'll all have a great time.
Well, thank you for your support.
And don't forget to listen to Nocturnal Journal. Who's on this week?
We've got a really interesting segment about the Stax Academy in Memphis. They're recreating, a bunch of kids are recreating the 50th anniversary tour from when Stax went there in 1967. So Otis Redding and Carla
fantastic,
Thomas.
Fantastic. It's a great show, Nocturnal Journal, Saturday nights. We'll be right back.